But if we can be caring and curious about what other people are feeling, we can make a better place. And if it's not a better world, maybe it's just a better community around us and we can all live happier.
House of Grace mit Sandra von Zabienski. Welcome to House of Grace, and let me introduce you to today's amazing podcast guest. It's Joe Padavila. Joe has produced over 10,000 hours of audio content over the course of his career in podcasting and radio. And Joe was a radio personality and producer on the legendary and iconic New York City radio show, Scott and Todd in the Morning. In his best-selling book, Good Listen, Creating Memorable Conversations in Business and Life, he shares his knowledge and expertise, as well as his experience as a radio personality, sketch comedian, and award-winning filmmaker. But today, we are not only going to explore the art of communication and learn how to create magical moments in every conversation. No, this conversation with Joe was truly life-changing for me. Because I thought I would learn how to small talk and create really interesting, compelling conversations. But instead, I did not learn only this. I got gifted with really deep insights about my conversation patterns. And I'm sure these recognitions will help me in all life areas. So I wish you a good listen and lots of inspiration. Joe, I'm super happy to have you on my podcast. Welcome.
Thank you, Sandra. I'm honored to be here. Usually I'm on the other side of things. So when someone invites me to be on a podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, of course. I'd love to talk to you, Sandra.
Yeah, I absolutely had to invite you because I saw your book, How to Create Interesting Conversations. And I was like, I have to interview this guy because believe it or not, I'm super bad at small talk. You know, I was working for the German movie industry and I went to a lot of movie premieres. And I was working more in the political side, like lobbying, etc., for the German Cinema Association. And of course, you meet a lot of people. And I was always standing there smiling and didn't know what to talk except of the weather. So when I saw the title of your book and also read your biography and what you did in life, because you have interviewed so many people. You have interviewed from Kim Kardashian to I have read the Jennifer Aniston story in your book. I hope we will talk about that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, okay, and now you are like the host of Forbes podcast, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I need to have Joe's advice. So I'm super happy.
I appreciate it, Sandra. And it's so funny because you messaged me about small talk. And I actually just wrote a piece about this the other day. I don't know if I published it yet, but basically I feel like people, and not you, Sandra, but a lot of people like hate small talk. Like they're like, they think it's like innocuous. It means nothing. But my argument to that is small talk is really all we have that binds us, Sandra. Like if you think about it, like the weather, like if you run into someone on the street, 9 out of 10 times, if they're a stranger, the first thing they're going to say is, how about that weather out there? How about that thing going on? Because if you think about it, we're in such a divisive world now. We're so polarized. We're all living in our own tribes that the only thing that really connects many of us, especially if we're strangers, is small talk. So I think small talk's super important because, as I wrote, you got to start small to get big. So you need those little moments, even though they may seem like a total waste of time, you need those sort of baby steps to create larger conversations that create impact. Because if we don't do that, it's really hard. I use the pool analogy. Like when you go in the pool, you start on the shallow end, work your way in the deep end. With conversations and connecting with people, you can't just jump into the deep end. You've got to start in the baby pool and then work your way down into like the 8-foot deep part.
That is so true. And also, now that you're saying this, you know, I moved from Germany to France, and in Germany, we are not very good in small talk. I don't know. Did you ever go to Germany?
No, but I've heard that stereotype of many of those sort of like Northern European countries. So yes.
Yeah. So we are very kind of strict. Even you can perceive us as rude, which is just, we are not rude. It's just totally normal. It's just a German way. Like, you know, I'm with a French man, and he really had to adapt to it, to that when he was asking me, Chiri, do you want to have a coffee? And I was like, no, which was a total normal German answer. And for him, it was like quite offensive.
depending. So for here, for example, when I go and shop a baguette, which is not a cliche, it's very true. Yeah, you shop a lot of baguettes. Mm-hmm. Then it's more like a dance. You go to the shop and you say, oh, bonjour, madame, comment allez-vous? Ça va, très bien. And then it's like, and then after a while, you order your baguette or whatever. And that also sets you in a different mood. It's like more friendly. And I love this kind of dancing way. But still, I struggle with small talk. And I think it's a very good point what you said, that it's meaningless, and especially, or that very often people perceive it as meaningless. And especially Germans, who always have to put a lot of meaning into everything, it's even a bigger challenge. So, Joe, please tell me, what can I do when I have my next business event or a big yoga conference and don't know what to talk in small talk wise?
So I know this is going to sound weird, but I always, the book you were mentioning called Good Listen, it sort of ties in whether you want to be a podcaster or you just want to be better communicating in life. And so a lot of the principles in being a good podcaster, and that's why I think the book works with people who aren't podcasters as well, is the gifts that you sort of relish and encourage as a podcaster can help you in real life. So for example, Sandra, when you're doing a podcast, and like you did today, I'm sure you looked me up, you Googled me, like we're going on a date, you probably found out all this information, and now you know a baseline of who I am. There's no reason we can't do that in real life. So when, Sandra, for example, in your case, when you're going to an event or some sort of gathering where it's people you're not familiar with, taking that extra step of finding little nuggets about a person or about an organization can really sort of fuel, it could kind of like light the spark of a conversation. So if you're going to a gathering of individuals who maybe have one connective thing amongst them all, find that thing and then explore with it. Because I think people, when you go out to events, they're more likely to share because they're out there, they want to schmooze, unless they're German, they're out there wanting to schmooze and share their thoughts with other people. And so if you can go in doing just like the slightest bit of research, whether it's on an individual or an organization, all you want to do is like tee them up. Just be like, oh, I saw that thing you guys did the other day. Can you tell me more about it? Oh, what is that event you guys put on last year? What was that all about? And then all of a sudden, you're opening up this person to just give you all the information you want, but then it gets you ready to take the next step of the conversation, which could be something more meaningful, something more impactful. But if you do the little thing, so like if you're doing a podcast, when you interview someone, you do some prep, you read up on them. But this does not say you can't do that in real life, especially if you're going to a business setting. If you have a meeting with a high net worth individual or someone who works for a big business, just look them up, see what's going on, check their social media, and then use those little nuggets to sprinkle on early in the conversation. And then all of a sudden, once you want to get to the meat of your talk, you are ready. You've got the person all primed and ready to talk.
And do you have also a recommendation how, because many people have this, to how to lose the fear of approaching a conversation. I think that's a big issue for many of us, especially when you're going for like network events or also when people are wanting to start a podcast, and then to lose their, or when they get interviewed, how to feel comfortable to speak with people.
Yeah. And I think the great thing is, and I argue that introverts are the best conversationalists because they're not so worried about waiting for the person to finish talking so they can talk. We're all guilty of this. But if you're an introvert or have this sort of fear of approaching people, I think in a way, the steps that I was just discussing was let the other person do the heavy lifting. Just a short little sentence will be, and then you put all the work on the other person. It's just like being a podcast host. You tee up a topic, you tee up a question, the other person then responds. So if you are nervous about approaching other people with small talk, if you have those tools in your toolbox of just anecdotes, little stories, little facts, you put the onus on the other person. And then as that person opens up to you, you then feel like it's easier for you to open up. So I think if you follow that kind of methodology, Sandra, you can certainly, if you're nervous and shy or fearful, if you put the work on the other people, your life is a lot easier because all you then have to do is just listen. Because once you're listening, then you're like, oh, I can ask him now about this or ask her about that, because they're feeding me all this additional information that I didn't have. And that really creates a sort of bridge between two people where then the information can flow in both directions.
Did you ever have this fear?
No, unfortunately, Sandra, I'm one of those obnoxious people that can like talk to a wall. It's funny. I have friends and they have like teenage kids and they have like 80-year-old parents. And when we go to like little parties, I can talk to both of them. It's just sort of like my wiring and my DNA. And I understand that a lot of people don't have that. But I think at the end of the day, the base root of who I am and why I'm able to communicate with people, Sandra, is curiosity. I feel like I'm not sure how it is in Europe, but here in America, there's this culture of if a child asks too many questions, a parent's like, quit asking so many questions. Shut up over there. Just be quiet for a minute. And this is just my opinion. I haven't done any research on this, but I just see this anecdotally that over years and years of people telling you to stop asking questions, it becomes hardwired into you that, oh, I guess I can ask people questions. I can't be curious. I can't be nosy, if you want to use that word. I'm not sure if that's how they bring up children in Europe, but in the States, that's a big thing, like preventing people from asking questions. And so I feel like that has a lot to do with it. We get to a certain age when we should ask questions, but we're in the back of the recesses of our brain. We're like, oh no, don't ask. Don't be nosy. Don't ask all these questions. So I've never had that fear. Because of the fact that I've always been curious my whole life. My parents never told me to stop asking questions. At one point, I'm sure they wish I did, but I never did. So I think it's super important that, you know, if you're a parent listening to this, encourage questions. And if you're a human being struggling with this that we're talking about, Sandra, encourage yourself to ask questions and be curious, because at the root of all of our issues in this world today, I think curiosity is a big part of it. Like, we don't care what other people in other tribes think, whether it's a political affiliation, gender, race, whatever. If you just live within your own tribe, you're not curious about why other people think that, you'll automatically go to the worst possible thing. Oh, that person does this because of that, as opposed to getting to know that person and trying to discover why they did or said something that maybe offended you or something like that. So if we maintain curiosity and not keep ourselves locked in our tribes, I like to say find a tribe, but avoid being tribal, because we all need a tribe. Like, we all want to be surrounded by people that are like us, whether they look or think like us. But tribal to me, this is me, has a negative connotation, because tribal to me means that, oh, I am only about this tribe. I only want to communicate with anyone outside of my tribe is bad, or I don't agree with them. So always think about that in your life. Have that tribe, flourish in your tribe, but don't be tribal. Let yourself explore outside of a tribe.
I love what you said. And also, to answer your question, yes, it's the same in Europe, or at least Germany. I was shut down when I was younger, actually. I have this curiosity though. And personally, I consider myself as an extroverted introvert, so I can speak publicly, but yeah. I replenish when I'm alone. And I love that your curiosity later also became your job, because you were one of the hosts or one of the staff of a super popular radio show. And I have bought your book, which is amazing, by the way.
Thank you.
And I've read so many examples, which really inspired me. May you give us some of the wonderful anecdotes, like, for example, I think this was the very beginning of your career, and it started kind of like with Jennifer Aniston. Is that
right? Yeah. And it's a great thing to bring up, Sandra, you're talking about fear. So when I started with this morning show, the hosts were legendary personalities in New York. One's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The other was a big announcer with the WWE. And so I was just this young kid. I was just trying to make a name for myself in the world of radio. And this is before the internet the internet was around, but like social media and trying to find information about people wasn't really prevalent. We got a call into the studio during the morning show, and they said, hey, did you guys know that Jennifer Aniston is filming her new movie outside your building? You guys should go try to talk to her. So we hang up the phone. They're like, all right, Joe, why don't you go down there and interview her? I'm like, Yeah, I guess so. I'll go try to interview the biggest star on the planet. This is like at the height of Friends. She just started a movie career. Like she was like, she was on the cover of Rolling Stone. She was just huge. So I go down with my little, well, at the time, big cell phone. And I get to this little part of Midtown Manhattan. It's sort of like this quiet sort of business part where it's like in between rush hour. So it's almost secluded. And all there was sitting on this one street on 33rd Street was this trailer. And there was a large, large fellow standing around it. So I'm like, oh, that must be Jennifer Aniston's trailer. So I see a break. The large security guard walks away. And I walk over to the door. And all of a sudden he goes, where do you think you're going? I'm like, oh, hi, I'm just going to talk to Jennifer Aniston. I'm from WPLJ. And when I get nervous, that my voice goes up like 12 octaves. And I'm like, yeah, I'm from WPLJ. I want to talk to Jennifer Aniston, Scott and Todd show. We're big fans, blah, blah. He goes, no, you're not. I'm like, oh, get out of here. I'm like, all right. So I walk away. And then at this point, I'm like, I got to do something. This is my big break. I've gotten my foot in the door. I've finally got this job in New York radio. I'm barely 21 years old. I say, screw it. I'm just going to go for it again. The guy walks away from the door. I start to mosey on over and he goes, where do you think you're going? And I'm like, oh, and then of course, oh, you know, it's kind of time in the morning. We want to talk to Jennifer Aniston. We'll be fast. He goes, get out of here. And then at that moment, all of a sudden, the door creeps open a little bit and Jennifer Aniston pokes her head out. And at this point, I was like, this is just like so surreal. Like, this is Rachel Green, like talking to me right now. She goes, hello, can I help you? And I'm like, and then of course, oh, I'm from the Scott and Todd show. I'm really excited when I talk to you. She goes, oh, I'm sorry. I really can't do an interview right now. I'm getting ready for a scene. So I can't do it right now. So dejectedly, I go back up to the studio, tail between my legs. And I feel like I failed. And all of a sudden, the front desk calls our studio. And the young lady says, hey, by the way, there's a woman by the name of Jennifer Aniston on the phone. She'd like to talk to you guys and apologize for what happened to your reporter downstairs. Do you want us to put her through? And we're like, yeah, go ahead and put Jennifer Aniston through. So they connect Jennifer Aniston to the studio. And next thing you know, we end up having a 30-minute conversation with Jennifer Aniston about her TV career, movie career, about her family. And it was all because of the fact that I just showed, some might say, stupid fearlessness, but I just felt like this was my opportunity to leave my mark. And, you know, Sandra, talking about fear is a big thing that drives us all. And sometimes you have to just push your way through it. And in that moment, I was fortunate enough to do so, because I think had I just walked away after that first time with that security guard, that moment would have never happened. And never would have had this experience of just being bold and brave and just being able to just put myself out there in a way that risked myself not only physical harm, but mental harm, all sorts of harm. But it worked out because I was able to push through. And again, I was young and dumb, but that's why I always tell people who are young, like, boy, take your 20s to do young and dumb things. Like, really enjoy yourself. Take risks. You know, when you get a little older and you've got a mortgage and you've got a family, it's harder. So try to get all those risky, daring moves out of your system before it's too late. And luckily, I did it early enough in my career.
How did it went from that boat move on forwards? How did your career develop? And what was... Maybe you can also give us some insights what you have learned, like, when, because I can imagine when you're doing interviews, of course you get better with time, and maybe you have some like some five important insights what you have learned, or also I could imagine there were some interviews which were quite funny or awkward. Or I also read about this Tyler. Taylor Swift, daggers.
Yeah, we can get to that. I mean, Sandra, I will say that I had a moment early in my career around the time of this Jennifer Aniston story where, do you remember that movie Risky Business with Tom Cruise, like his first movie role? There's a scene in the movie where he's kind of like this young, awkward guy, and he finds his ethos. And his ethos is that sometimes you just got to say F it. Like, sometimes you just have to be like, let everything go and just F it. He said the full F word. And for some reason, I was having trouble at work one day with technical stuff like buttons and everything like that. And I kept hitting the wrong buttons and everything like that. And I was getting like reamed out by my bosses, like, what's going on? Why can't you get this right? Blah, blah, blah. And then one day, for some reason, this random movie from the 80s, this was like maybe 15, 20 years later, just stuck in my head where I said, F it. I have to just let it all go. I think we all have that like F it moment where we're just like, screw all that. Why am I stressing so much about it? And from that point forward, and I know it sounds like cinematic and almost like a fable, but truthfully for myself, whether I made mistakes afterwards, I'm sure I did. I felt like once I was able to get off that hump, and this is like 20 something years ago, Sandra, and I still remember like saying that to myself. I think we all have sort of these like mile markers in our life.
Absolutely.
Whether it's not like an event happened to you, but sort of like a moment of clarity came upon
Absolutely.
You. And so once that happened, I felt like my career just kind of snowballed and just took off because I was out of my own head. And one of the things, Sandra, I'm not sure how much improv is popular in Europe, but improv comedy.
I was going to ask you this question.
Yeah. And I think this connects to this, Sandra. So improv comedy, it's for those not familiar, it's basically when two people act out a scene that's unscripted and you're just trying to find the humor in a moment. And the basic principle of improv, and actually the full name of it is long form improvisational comedy, is to yes and the person. So what that means is when someone, they call it your scene partner, when your scene partner gives you information, you yes and that information. So you say, so for example, Sandra, if you say to me, hi, my name is Sandra, and I am a firefighter who lives in the Alps. And I'll be like, so in a normal conversation, Sandra, most people will be like, no, you're not. You're Sandra. You do a podcast. You're on Instagram. You're not all that. But in improv, you say, yes, you are a firefighter that lives in the Alps, and I understand that you once saved a koala bear. And again, these are really cheesy lines, but that's the essence of improv. You're yes-anding. You are confirming what the person said and adding information to the story. And that's what, then you heighten and explore, and you get into nuts and bolts of things. The reason I bring this up, Sandra, is if you think about it, conversations, being a podcast host, in a work environment, in a relationship, yes-anding can be a great skill. Like, to be able to have someone give you information and not have your initial reaction be no. Because, Sandra, we all know people like this. It's always no before yes. They'll actually say no to something before they even, like, can process what you actually asked them. So I always feel like if you can start the second part of a conversation with a yes and adding to it, that is what keeps it flowing. Because once, for example, if we did that scene, Sandra, where you said you're a firefighter in the Alps, and I said, no, you're not. Scene's over. Like, nothing can happen at that point. But if I yes and it, the scene can progress. We can heighten. We can explore. We can have fun with it. Same with a conversation in real life, Sandra. If you yes what the person says and then add information to it, that's how you create this connective tissue. Because then the other person is like, oh, yes. Oh, and what you said? Yes and to that. And then yes and. And then all of a sudden, you've created what I call these like magic moments. This this sort of chemistry that you can, that only comes from when two or more people get together in a room and communicate with one another. And I think it's super important. So yeah, and you were sweet enough to say you were going to mention that. But like, that's a big part of what I felt was one of the things that took me to the next level. I was sort of living that sort of process in what I was doing in my day to day, but it just really just sort of confirmed what I knew to be true, that, oh, if I do these things, and a big part of improv too, Sandra, is listening, because you can't yes and if you're not listening. If you're just thinking about what's a funny thing you're going to say instead of listening what the other person is going to say, then it's not going to go anywhere. So those two elements, I think, are super important and really improved my way of communicating, because I focus on listening to the person, but again, with that curiosity gene that I have. So the curiosity, I always say, like, people can't be good listeners unless they're curious, because it's like watching a TV show. If you have a show on and you're not like curious about it, it could be on and you could kind of like half listen or something like that. And many of us do that in conversations where we're sort of listening, but not, because we don't care, you know, substitute care for curiosity. And I think it's super important. So it was those two things, being able to listen, be curious, but then also yes, anding a person, just adding information to what people say and agreeing with what they say. Now, obviously, if someone says something wackadoodle in real life and it's something crazy, you can yes and, but you can, in a way, think first positive as opposed to negative. So if you want your takeaway to be that, just like, don't immediately be like, reject something, whether it's wrong or something you disagree with, just be like, yeah, but, you know, you could take the and turn it into a but, because I think at that point you can then continue the conversation as opposed to ending it.
Joe, this is so inspiring. And, you know, it just really, seriously, it just came to my mind and I just recognized in this very clear moment, so I have a clear moment, that I have a really terrible nitpicking attitude, because I have this initial no. Like, especially when it's in professional content, because I'm a super nerd, you know, and I'm like, this is not right. This is not really cool. That's what you're saying. I'm like, no, I know it better than you, because I'm so convinced I'm like nearly always right or 100% right. Sure. So I really just recognize that I have an initial no very often in a lot of conversations. And I will definitely change it. I will let you know how it goes from there. But that is so inspiring right now.
I appreciate that, Sandra. And I think it's like little steps like that help us to improve. You know how they always say like no one really changes. I'm like, I mean, I guess that's possibly true, but there's no reason we can't improve. So I always do that to myself in everyday life, Sandra. I'll find this one thing that sort of drives me crazy that I do or that other people do and stop it. Like, I got on this kick a few weeks ago about busy, about this. The word busy has so much weight today. Sandra, if you said to me, hey, Joe, can you do this thing for me? And I say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm busy. You would automatically be like, oh, my God, Joe's busy. I can never ask another question of him. This is the world we live in. If you say that, it's like the gauntlet. Like, once you've laid the word busy down, the world knows that you cannot be approached. You have got this shield around you that you are busy. And so I just started this thing where I just stopped using that word. Like, I just, that four letter word was busy. I was like, I'm not going to use it anymore. I'm going to be completely transparent as to why I'm not going to do or do something. So if someone were to say, hey, Joe, are you available at 2 p.m.? I said, I'd love to, but I have this thing. Because I feel like if we do that, it's also fair to other people. Like I said, I feel like this whole thing about busyness, like this busy culture, like Sandra, I bet you if you asked 10 people today, how was their day? I swear to you, I'm sure 9 out of 10 would say they were busy. But were they? Like, could they do nothing else? One of the anecdotes I used recently about this is a part of my job working with Forbes Books, Sandra, is I produce dozens of podcasts. So I'm always looking for guests to appear on the podcast. And a lot of them are sometimes, you know, CEOs of major brands, major companies, and I'll pitch them to be on a podcast, and they'll 99% of the time say the person's too busy. And then my brain starts to get like my sarcastic New Yorker brain kicks in, and I'm like, yes, but if I was Joe Rogan, not Joe Partavilla, and I invited you to be on a podcast for 3 hours that would be listened to by 30 million people, would you still be busy? Probably not. Like, we find time for things. Like, Sandra, I'm sure you've read the book, He's Just Not That Into You. There was that movie about, like, signs that people are not into you. In a way, that's busy. Like, you make time.
So many things.
Time for things you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. Actually, I had a conversation with my fiance the last week about
congratulations.
It.
Congratulations. I saw you that he engaged. Congratulations.
So new, yes. So, I feel so good to say that. That this is really true, that we are, that it's not, we don't have enough time. When we are not doing things, then they are not as important for us as others. And this is so true, and this is also so helpful when you are making this clear for yourself, because you can reevaluate also, is this really so important, or can I make time for this? Do I want to have a new experience? Do I want to break out of certain behavioral patterns or your day schedule and make actually time for something new?
Yeah.
So I think that's very helpful.
In this day and age too, as you know, in the streaming world that we live in, you know, people somehow who are so busy have 11 hours to spare to binge watch the latest Netflix show. So, I mean, again, I wrote this post on Medium, like, you're not that busy. You're really, really not. And yeah. I always feel like, you know how it, I say, like, it gives people the air that you cannot do this thing. It also is sort of this, it's sort of like this false narrative of like, oh my God, I have possibly no time to do anything else in my life. I'm like, yeah, you do. If you really want to do something else, you will.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's so cool what you have learned over the years. And also thank you for that too. Very, very good recommendations to say yes, to have an inner yes for conversations, and also to listen. I think this is something we don't practice enough today. Yeah. I don't know how do you feel, but so I have the experience that also by myself, I can see this, but also in other people, that most of the conversation we are waiting for our turn, and like when the other person is telling something, you already have in mind what to answer, yep. and you're just eager to put yourself out there. Yeah. You have this too. And when you have a conversation or an interview, how do you handle this? How do you?
Yeah. I mean, I think Sandra, we are all guilty of this. I'm guilty of this.
We're all guilty of this, Sandra. Conversation.
Yeah.
You never have this.
I used to be part of a morning show with like four or five other people. And a lot of the times we would get caught in this trap of, I'm just waiting for this person to shut up so I could talk. And I think this is how, you know, the word intentional comes into play. And I think it's one of those things where when you're in the scenario where you're fighting with every hope and being part of your being that you're like, man, I just want this person to shut up so I can talk. You've really got to be intentional of sort of just like slapping yourself in the face metaphorically, figuratively, not literally. So, and that does happen to me from time to time. So if that does happen, Sandra, the one thing I will say is when that sort of thing trickles into your brain, have that conversation with yourself and be like, shut up, let this person talk. Like it's one of those things where we always have mental gymnastics in our own brain. We're having conversations with our inner monologue. And I think that's where it's okay for you to sort of address yourself. And I sometimes feel people think, oh, that's kind of egotistical. But literally even just say like, Sandra, like if I was you, I'd be like, Sandra, just shut up. Let this person finish, you know, or Joe, shut up. Let this person finish talking and then you can talk. So if you can kind of do those little things to, and if obviously you don't want to have that conversation for too long because then all of a sudden you're not listening. So try to make it kind of quick and be like, you know, shut up, let this person time. And then you could always, you know, kind of jump in and be like, hey, if I may interrupt you, as long as it's part of what their narrative they're trying to get across, you know, interrupting a person is not the rudest thing in the world. So interrupting someone who goes off on a tangent is not, I don't think, rude, as long as you're not all of a sudden interrupting them to take this conversation into another direction altogether. If you keep it on the same topic, I think the other person will be like, oh, okay, cool. This person is just interrupting me to add more to what I was saying. So as long as you're interrupting for the sake of keeping the conversation in the same context, I think that's okay. Mm-hmm. But if you're interrupting to the line, be like, oh, no, that's not really what I want to talk about. I want to talk about something else completely. Then I think you've kind of been rude and sort of not listening to what the person's been saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I say very often, absolutely, because it's there are so many moments in this conversation. You know, I have to admit, I was just thinking when you were talking that this, I know, guilty again, but not to put something out there. It was like, oh my God, Sandra, you thought this would be a conversation about small talk and how shit you are in small talk and how to enhance this, but actually it's how to create better personal conversations, because I am guilty of not always listening. I am guilty of interrupting. I am guilty of a nitpicking no in the beginning. And this just in this conversation with you, Joe, was really, really clear to me that I have this three things going on. And I don't know, you know, sometimes you know things, but then you really know, they kind of fall in a deeper level of yourself and you truly understand. And actually, I really have to thank you, because I think our podcast interview will be a life-changing event for me in terms of conversation. I absolutely did not expect that. Well, but thank you so much.
I'm flattered, Sandra. And I will say, I think that's one of the great things about having a connection with a person during a conversation. We all go in being like, okay, I want to talk about these things. And that's why I always, when I consult and coach people, to not have too many questions in mind when it comes to a podcast. Because what that does is it sort of puts, I don't know if you bowl, but you know how when kids are bowling, they put the guardrails on the side so the ball doesn't go in the gutter, so kids can bowl without, it's like these little guards. So basically when you put these guards in the bowl and when you bowl, the ball won't go in the gutter. So when kids play, they can hit the pins. And I think we do that many times with our conversations where we put these sort of guardrails up that we only want the conversation to flow in one certain way. And if you do that, you sort of prevent any kind of magic from happening because it becomes this really structured thing. One of the things I like to tell people is if you have 10 questions prepared for an interview and you only use two, that means it was a great conversation. It wasn't an interview. It was a conversation. And I always tell people, use the word interview for shorthand, but you really should think of it as a conversation, not as an interview, because an interview, at the end of the day, Sandra, is question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. That's not engaging. Yeah. No one cares about that. When people tune into this podcast, Sandra, they don't want to just hear what this idiot has to say. They want to hear what you have to say. They want to see what you have to yes and to what I'm saying. And that's what great conversation is all about. That's what great audio content is all about. That's what people in connecting in real life is all about. This interchange and this, again, this sort of like alchemy that you only happens when there's two people or more together in one spot. You know, the old joke, one podcast equals five first dates. How many times do you have a 1 hour uninterrupted conversation with another human being? It's very rare. And I think that's why podcasting is so impactful, because you could share so many ideas, share so much about yourself in such a small amount of time that can be not only life-changing for the people involved in the conversation, but also the people listening as well.
In terms of life-changing conversations, did you had one or two, maybe in a good way, maybe in a not so good way? I'm still thinking about Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
In your career, no matter if it was podcast or a radio show or maybe also private.
Yeah, no, I think the Taylor Swift example is a perfect one and one I really learned from, not just because she's like the most famous person on the planet, but it really showed me the importance of creating a safe place for a conversation. So the Taylor Swift story that I write about in the book, at the time she was going to come to our radio show to promote her latest album. And many radio stations do this all over the world where they'll video record the interview that's going to be on the radio, but so then they could share it on YouTube, social media. But Taylor Swift's PR team had this really odd rule. We would only be able to video record 5 minutes of the interview, but not just any 5 minutes, the first 5 minutes. So, you know, that whole small talk thing where like, it's just a waste of time. That's what they wanted us to video record. And it pissed me off. I was like, this is bullshit. You know, we've got the most famous singer in the world. We want to have content to put out there to our audience, and it's going to be crap. It's going to be like, hey, Taylor, how's the weather? You know, the opening, that small talk we began this conversation with. So it really annoyed me. So the day of the interview, Taylor Swift comes in with her team, and our videographer is standing to the left of me. The publicist makes a beeline straight to him and says, hey, just so you know, when we get to 5 minutes, I'm just going to tap you on the shoulder, just lower the camera, and we're done with the video. And I had been stewing on this for weeks. I was so annoyed. I was complaining to anyone who would listen to me. I'm sure I was driving people crazy. And so I turn to the publicist and I say, oh, just a quick question about that. If we get to the 5 minute mark and there's a follow-up question to that last answer, would we be able to keep recording? And they're like, oh yeah, I'm sure we'll be able to do that. I'm sure that's fine. And then I said, but wait one thing. What if I had a follow-up question to that first follow-up question? Would we still be able to keep recording? And they're like, yeah, I mean, I guess so. And then I'm not one to leave well enough alone, Sandra, if you can get from our conversation so far. I said, what if we have a follow-up question to the second follow-up question that connects to the first follow-up question? Would we be able to continue video recording? Now, at this point, the PR person is flummoxed, has no idea how to answer. But on the other side of the room, one said pop star heard this whole thing shake out. And I hear this one line across the room. I'll never forget it. She says, well, somebody woke up feeling saucy this morning, and the whole room went quiet. And then everything went quiet. We're about to start the interview, and it just became a bland, lifeless interview because Taylor Swift was not comfortable. She's like, this guy here, he's a dick. He's going to probably say something rude or offensive because he doesn't care about saying something sort of, I wouldn't say offensive, but something, you know, that was not relevant to the conversation. So it was terrible. And it was because I put my ego first. I was just all about getting this stupid social media video that probably a few thousand people would watch. It would not change our lives in any way. But I put that all above just creating these magic moments we're talking about. Like, because of me setting the stage of this hostile environment, Taylor didn't feel comfortable. So she kind of just gave her mechanical, rehearsed answers. And at the end of it, we got nothing out of it. We got a stupid photo, a mediocre interview, and 5 minutes of video we can never use ever in our lives. And I learned from that. And I learned the importance of creating an environment where people want to share ideas, want to open up. And if you don't do that from the jump, small talk. Like, that's how you start. Like, easy. Like, if I could have just said anything else instead of talking about that stupid video, we could have opened her up, loosened her up, and it would have been a great interview, but I didn't do that. So when you're having an important conversation in your life, whether it's a podcast, whether it's with your spouse, whether it's with your family or friends or coworkers, create that environment of safety. Make them feel like they're going to be okay no matter what the conversation goes, no matter what you ask down the road, taking those baby steps to the big moments. If you don't start by creating that environment, it's never going to get there. And so that was a big, big lesson that I learned. And luckily, Taylor didn't write a song about me because of that. Who knows? Maybe one day she will. But I learned a lot from that.
What I was thinking, sorry, again.
No. Listen, I want to tell you. I want you to keep in mind. I think it's important for me to say this. I want you to think while I'm talking. It's the old adage, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. We as human beings, we're highly evolved. We can do two things at once. The one thing is when you're listening and thinking, the one thing you have to make sure is that your thinking isn't louder than your listening. So please, I don't want you to not think while a conversation's going on when the other person's speaking, and I don't want anyone to take that away from this. I want you to be like, it's almost like you have two, like a subtitle, like when you're watching a movie with subtitles. I want you to think as the audio is the person speaking and the subtitles is your brain. So just to be, and you just got to be able to do that at the same time. You just don't want those subtitles to take up the whole screen. You want those subtitles to stay really small. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. So what were you thinking about?
Yeah. What the small subtitle said was, you are not able to do this. If you are not making the other person feeling safe, you are not able to go to this deeper moment. And I was like, in small subtitles thinking, how do you bridge this? How do you create this bridge to having a deeper, meaningful conversation? How do you generate this flow with ease to step into the deeper waters of the conversation? Are there tools or is there anything? Yeah, there are.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Sandra, I got an answer for everything, so don't worry about that. So obviously the small talk, creating the space, those are sort of like the building blocks. The next thing is something I call boomerasking. So there was a Harvard professor who did this study and came up with this term called boomerasking. Now, in real life, boomerasking can seem, I'll explain to you. So boomerasking is when you ask someone a question that you have an answer for. And so in normal life, if you do that a lot, it could be kind of rude because basically you're just asking questions so you can answer them. But I think it's important, especially if you're trying to connect with someone, boomerasking can be a great tool. So an example of this, Sandra, would be if I ask you, hey, Sandra, have you been to Mexico? How was that like for you? Knowing that I've been to Mexico and I got food poisoning when I was in Mexico. So I have this anecdote and story in the back of my brain that I'm going to share with you after you've shared your anecdote. So if you can do, and I wouldn't do, again, it's super important that you don't do this for every question or topic, but I think especially when you're just getting to know someone, asking those kind of boomer-ass questions allow you to open up? Because sometimes when you are sort of like the type A in the conversation or sort of leading the conversation, sometimes the other person, your partner in the scene or this moment, is probably not going to ask you anything back. So if you're able to ask a question that will allow you to answer, that will give you the opportunity to share who you are. I think it's a great thing for podcasters, especially if they have thoughts on certain subjects. So asking a question that you have an answer for is a great tool for a podcaster, but it's also a wonderful tool in a business setting, family setting, that you have the opportunity to share your side of a story without kind of prodding the other person. You're almost sort of like subversively prodding this person so then you can respond to it. So the boomer ask is a great tool for anyone who wants to share more about themselves without it being, hey, by the way, Sandra, you know, I went to Mexico. It's like, instead of doing that, it's like, hey, Sandra, have you been to Mexico? And then all of a sudden I have an anecdote that goes with that.
What was the food poisoning story in Mexico?
Oh, no, that was I got sick from eating a bad taco. But yes, it's not a great story, but I had an anecdote ready to go.
You got my attention.
Yes.
When you have a person who is never asking a question, you know, because I have a friend, for example, who's, I love him. He's really, really sweet, such an inspiring person. But when we meet, it's very, very rare. Sometimes when he's in a good mood, he asks questions. But usually I have to do all the conversation and I have to ask all the questions. And there's just call and response, you know, yeah. It's like just question, answer. What are you doing like in real life or in business situations or when you're doing a podcast or an interview or whatever, because the situation can come up in every situation of every aspect of life. What are you doing then? Is this, for example, what you're saying, this type of asking, is this, for example, something we can use? Or
if you deal with someone like that, who's just maybe lacks curiosity or doesn't care about what you have to say, boomer asking is a great tool. I mean, when you're dealing with folks like that, which it happens from time to time, I think the best thing for you, especially for your sort of like your spirit and your energy, is sort of like keep those sessions as short as possible. You know, I think that's because I think it doesn't really do any good for you as a human being, because I think the one thing that really feeds us all is sort of like each other's energy. And that person sounds more of like, you know, again, I'm not being a psychotherapist, more of like an energy vampire. Like they're just sucking all of your energy. So if you have people like that who lack the curiosity in your life, you probably don't want to be around them. And it may be unintentional that they just are uncomfortable asking questions or something like that. But at the end of the day, that's probably not healthy for you, because you want people to say, hey, how was your day? How's the weather? And oh, by the way, how are you feeling today? So I think if you can avoid those kind of, and sometimes you can't, sometimes it's a coworker, sometimes it's someone in your family, you can't, but if you keep those sort of moments in time as short as possible, I think you're better off for it, because at the end of the day, they're not worth your time. Why are you giving them all of this time if they're not, because a conversation is a give and take. It can't be all take. And so if you're not doing that, avoid those kind of people, or just limit your time with individuals like that.
Yeah, I also, to his honor, he's not always like this. He's awesome.
So he that's good. Well, on the times he's like that, just pull the pin and get out of there. Yeah.
I just tell him the next time. And I have this new tool where I ask a question where do I have the answer to. So maybe this working. I will let you know.
Yeah, give it a try.
Joe, was there also something, a moment in a conversation or in an interview or in a podcast interview where you were so inspired and like I had this moment of clarity for my style of communication right now? Was there something in your life, one experience? And if yes, would you like to share?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one, and this sort of connects perfectly to what we're just talking about. The ability when you are meeting someone or interviewing someone to share a part of yourself, I think opens up the other people. So in this one example, so I'm a big fan of the football team, the American football team, the New York Jets, and they're historically really bad. And they've never won a title since before I was born. And it being a Jets fan's very difficult. But okay. I had the opportunity to interview Jesse James Decker, who's a country star, influencer, reality show star. And she was married to one of the players of the New York Jets, Eric Decker. Good looking wide receiver, like shredded, like really good looking. They're like one of those like annoyingly beautiful families. Like they're both stunning. Their kids look like they're models. But at the time we interviewed her, she was promoting like her new album. The Jets were, again, terrible as usual. And we were talking about the album and everything like that. But then at that one moment, I was like, I need to share how I feel as a fan of this team. And I said to her, and this is very well known in most sports. Like at the end of games, after they've finished playing, the teams, both sides of the teams will like hug and like laugh and enjoy themselves. But the fans watching at home are like, what the hell are they happy about? They just lost and they're having a gay old time talking to their friends from the other team. So I brought this up to her and I said, Jesse, as a Jets fan, it drives us crazy that we sit there on a Sunday afternoon for 3 hours, our hearts are ripped out of our chest, and then we look down at the field at the end of the game, and all the players on both sides, the losers and the winners, are just laughing it up. They're just living their best life. And I said to her, what does Eric feel like? You know, at this point, had lost like 8 or 9 games in a row. He was having a terrible season. What does he feel like? Because I feel like shit. How does he do it? And she goes, I'll be honest with you. He's depressed. He'll come home after a game, say, everyone leave me alone. I'm just going to go in my bedroom and lay down. Mm-hmm. Now, for a professional athlete's wife to share that in public is incredibly rare. And I think the only reason she was comfortable sharing that pain was because I was sharing my pain. And obviously, Sandra, in the scheme of things, your losing football team is not a big part of your life, but it's a part of your life, whether you like it or not, if you are a fanatic of a certain club. And I don't think we would have gotten there if I didn't share my pain. So I think it's okay for people to be, as long as you're comfortable, sharing your pain, discomfort with other people, because that will allow them to share their pain and discomfort with you. And it requires, I mean, I'm telling you, that's requires some heady, like next level stuff to be able to be open and authentic and empathetic and being able to be just so like opening your guts to another human being. That takes a lot getting to. But if you're trying to become better at communicating with other individuals, whether you're a podcaster or just in real life, you need to be able to be honest, open, and transparent about yourself to get other people to be honest, open, and transparent about themselves.
I think this is so true. It's that when I recap my conversations, also my podcast interviews, the ones where we both like shared really vulnerable or we're not scared to show vulnerability and be just super honest. These were the best conversations, and thank you for sharing the story, by the way.
thank you very much. It. Yeah.
Joe, we are actually nearly talked for 1 hour, and I'm very proud. I just used, I think, 2 questions on my question list. So I think we have a conversation, but what I really would love to know is, can you tell us more about your book?
Yeah, so
because there were so many examples. I think there were so many examples, and I think there were so many findings just in this conversation. It would be super interesting for people, whether you have a podcast, an interview, or just for conversations in real life. And so I would love to know more about it and to introduce it to my audience.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Sandra. And yeah, the book is called Good Listen. And I'll be fully transparent, Sandra. I'm sure you'll meet a lot of people who have like writing a book on their bucket list. I was never that person. I never thought I had. No, I never had that. My life is worth a book. Like the idea of a book just seems so like completely out of left field. Like I would never even consider it. But what happened
I'm one
was
of that person.
You're one of those people. Okay.
And it came out last year.
So. Oh, good. Congratulations. That's great. Yeah. So I never thought about it, Sandra. And what happened was, you know, we discussed earlier that I worked in terrestrial radio in New York, and in 2019, the radio station I was working for sold to another company. It was a Christian broadcasting company, so they were going to get rid of all the employees. Mm-hmm. So I like to joke that I was fired by Jesus. And after that, I took this job with Forbes Books, producing podcasts for entrepreneurs and hosting podcasts. And one of the things that I realized was, and we were all guilty of this as well, is I had taken for granted all of the skills and all the knowledge that I learned over my 20 years in terrestrial radio. I just assumed like, oh, everyone knew what I know. Everyone knows how to communicate. Everyone knows how to do an interview. And I know it's silly to say that out loud, but that's honestly what I thought. Like, I thought all these skills that I can do, I think anybody can do. As someone listening to me, has been like, well, this guy sounds really cocky. But at the end of the day, I'm cocky, but I don't like to say I'm confident, but I'm also I'm still that scared little fat kid from school growing up. And as I started working with our clients, I realized that no, not everyone has these skills or these experiences that can help them be better at communicating or better at podcasting. So I was teaching these folks what I learned, and I realized, wow, I guess what I have is valuable to people. And so when I went to my publisher, I said, I'm using all these anecdotes and these tips with our clients. Is this a book? And they said, yeah, this is a book. And I just went and did it. I knocked it out in like 6 months because all of it was fresh. Like all these stories and anecdotes I've shared with you today, a lot of them are sprinkled in the book, but a lot of them were all just very top of mind and fresh. And all these things that we've been discussing are stuff that I talk to my clients about every day. And I just jammed them into a book. So it's part memoir, but also part sort of self-improvement to help people better themselves, be the best kind of human they can be. And you can do that by being a better listener and being more curious. And I think that's super important. And that's sort of what driven me as a human and as a professional. And I think people can learn a couple things, hopefully a couple things from the book. If not, you could also just trade in the book or something like that. I use bookstore. But I think it's one of the things where it's a lot of it is obvious. I remember there was a guy, someone wrote a review, which is never a good thing to read reviews, but he said something. This is a lot of this in the book is obvious, but it's really good for young people. And I'm like, no, I mean, yes. A lot of it can appear obvious, but I don't think it's just for young people. I think we're all really, and I don't want to say bad at communicating, but I just don't think we know what good communication is, especially with technology. And I don't want to be the old man shouting at the clouds. I love technology. It's just that the more and more technology we use, the less and less real life IRL communicating with people we have. So whatever we can do to sharpen that, whether it is to read a book, listen to conversations like this, or just get out and, you know what, have a conversation with someone, you're never going to be good at that unless you do it.
Yeah. And I think even when you are not taking out anything of this book, I have had a glimpse on it, and it's so funny and witty written. I think everyone who buys this book will love it. I loved it. Oh, I mean, I haven't read it for completely, but I love just the style. It's so easy to read, and also for the German listeners, it's easy to understand. So
good. Yeah, I mean, I'm very basic, as you could tell, Sandra, from this conversation. I'm not the smartest bulb, but I'm very passionate, and it's funny. I always have people when I meet with clients for the first time. They're kind of just sitting there and just kind of like a glazed look over their eyes after me just schlepping, like just like talking like this. And like, man, you're really passionate about what you do. And I'm like, I don't feel it as passionate. It's just like, it's in my bones. It's like, this is how I am. Like yesterday I was at the post office and I had like a 5-minute conversation with the lady behind the counter. And it's just like, this is just the way I'm hardwired. I'm just like this. And I know not everyone's like this, but there's a couple things I feel that I could show people that can help them bridge that gap, take the next steps to be a better person.
Yeah, I really can feel it. Your passion, but also your that this is really you putting yourself out there. It's not just a facade. This is what comes here, yeah. In France when I see you with this air in this interview. I have really the feeling this is Joe, and this is him, and this is his life. And if you would be a post office person, I'm sure 100,000% that you would inspire with your daily conversations, with your small talk, the person there. And I'm so thankful that we set up this interview, which turned into a conversation, and that you gifted me with this clarity moment about some things which I can improve. And I'm really thankful. I'm very sure many people will be inspired too. So Joe, it was such a pleasure to have you. Last thing, tell us where we can find you. Tell us where we can buy this book.
Absolutely. Yes. So I'm very easy to Google. So if you Google Joe Pardevila, I'm very active on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The book, Good Listen, if you type it into any online retailer, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Good Listen, Creating Memorable Moments in Business Life, available on ebook, paperback, and audiobook. If you do like listening to my voice for several hours, feel free to get the audiobook. If you don't mind my annoying patter, you can check out the audiobook as well.
I'm sure people will be not annoyed. Joe, thank you so much for being here. Is there anything you would like to add or which you want to say, which I haven't asked you?
No, I will say, Sandra, thank you very much for having me on this. Like I started from the top, it's when I'm the interviewee, it's always hard. Like, to be honest with you, this is harder for me being the interviewee than interviewer. To me, interviewer, I can, do it standing on my head because I'm built for it. I have the skills for it, but I appreciate you having me on. And I think for folks listening, if the person that's listening to this right now, I think we just have to be better at trying to connect with other people. And you could do it in so many little ways. I'm not a religious person, Sandra, but one thing I like to say to people after I've finished a kind of interaction, I'll say to them, hey, have a great day. God bless. I'm not super religious, but the idea of like, quote unquote, blessing someone or sending someone good vibes can really just like fill them with so much positivity. And I feel like that's all, and I know this sounds super cheesy, but all I want to do is like entertain people or make them smile in all facets of my life, whether it's having this conversation with you, podcast, or just normal interactions with other people. So if we can just try to do that, and I always end every podcast, Sandra, with, live by the golden rule, treat everyone as you want to be treated. If we can sort of live with that kind of mantra, again, I know it sounds kind of religious, but I'm not. I'm quite agnostic. If we can do that, I think we could all build a better society. And I know it doesn't happen overnight, but if we can be caring and curious about what other people are feeling, we can make a better place. And if it's not a better world, maybe it's just a better community around us and we can all live happier.
That's super beautiful and absolutely not cheesy. I love it.
Thank you. Thanks.
So you fulfilled your job with me, definitely. Again, thank you so much for being here with me, gifting me with your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for giving this new clarity. And Joe, I hope a lot of people will buy your book and will be as inspired as I am. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra.